welcome to the Screen Realm Podcast. My name is Guillermo. I'm the manager of ScreenRealm.com. And I'm going to be talking about the week that was on the website and covering kind of some of the stuff that we've covered and maybe some of the stuff that we haven't been able to cover because there's so much happening. It's been a pretty busy week. We've got some reviews up on the site. Let's kick off with them straight away. We had Glenn Cochrane. Last week, he reviewed for us Creed 2. And this week, we've got Glenn reviewing the Christmas film, Netflix Christmas film, The Christmas Chronicles. I'm not a huge Christmas movie kind of guy. I don't care too much about these kind of family holiday films, but I know some of them can actually be really good. It's a Wonderful Life always has a special place in my heart. It's a beautiful film, but that's one that everyone talks about. So everyone loves that film. So The Christmas Chronicles stars Kurt Russell as Santa Claus. I saw the trailer for this a while back. I'm sure some of you guys have seen the trailer for this. It's up on Netflix right now. And it's a Netflix original film starring Kurt Russell as Santa. The story follows two children. They manage to capture Santa Claus on camera and they accidentally mess up his sleigh and risk jeopardizing Christmas for this year. And so they're going to end up helping Santa to deliver his gifts. Glenn absolutely loved it. He gave it 4 stars out of 5 stars, called it a wonderful film, a wholesome family film for both children and adults. I'm looking for the one line that I think it's a good little sum up. He says, "The Christmas Chronicles is a lovely addition to the ever-expanding catalog of festive gifts. It is guaranteed to put smiles on a lot of young faces, while parents might get a kick out of its mature nuances." He then goes on to say, "I can't think of a better way to kick off my Christmas viewing, and I can guarantee that this one will be on my list of movies to revisit in the years to come." If you are interested, you should definitely check it out. From what Glenn thinks, it's a really, really good film that ticks off that nice, wholesome family vibe really, really well. So Kurt Russell, Santa Claus, The Christmas Chronicles, 4 stars review. Go to ScreenRealm.com to read more on what he thought of the film. So I saw Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Guys, everyone loved this film. I loved this film. Talking about the animated Spider-Man film that's going to be arriving very soon. I loved it. I absolutely loved this film. I gave it 5 stars. I'm pretty tight when it comes to my scores. If I'm going to give 5 stars, it's going to be something that really stood out to me. And look, this is a damn good film. Everything about it is spot on. It's got so much heart. The action, the animation is insane. Oh my gosh, the humor. Everything about this film is pretty much exactly what you'd want. It's, I think, arguably the best Spider-Man movie thus far. I mean, Spider-Man 2, maybe? I mean, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2 is really, really good. So it's a toss-up between Spider-Man 2 and this film. That's a toss-up for me between them two. What's the best film? I don't know. As of now, because I just saw this is the best Spider-Man movie. It's so good. The screenplay, the characterization, the art design, the action, the emotion. It's just a good time in the cinema. I saw it at an early screening. The crowd was just enraptured in this thing. I mean, everyone was cheering and applauding. It's one of those films that's totally made specifically to grab the mainstream audience, just grab the public perfectly. It's great. Check out the 5-star review that I've got up on ScreenRealm.com. Just to give you a bit of a line that I think sums up my thoughts. "This is a precisely crafted crowd pleaser, a highly kinetic, uproarious, emotional ride that wears its love of the Marvel web slinger on its proverbial sleeve. With a ton of well-timed and non-smug meta jokes, the film carries a self-awareness of the Spidey brand's business, its place in time, and what the character means to so many, resulting in a joyous film that serves as a true celebration of all things Spider-Man." It's so good, guys. Comes out December 13. Highly suggest you go check it out after you check out my review. The other film that we had reviewed, completely different film, is Climax. Latest film from Gaspar Noé. I think that's how you say his surname. Noé? You may know as the director of Irreversible, I Stand Alone, Into the Void, and Love. A number of controversial films. He really likes to stir the pot with his filmmaking. And this one is another one. It's been getting a lot of buzz on the festival circuit. And we had Adam review it, Adam Fleet. He wasn't too impressed with this one, unfortunately. Looking at his review, he gave it 3 out of 5. No, so it wasn't terrible, but... excuse me. Oh, I think I'm just passing puberty. That's great. But the main issue is that it was a little dull. Now, just to give you a quick summary of the story, it is about a dance club that they have a party and the punch gets spiked, okay, with like LSD, so with some major stuff, and everyone starts tripping. out hard. That's what the film's about. And apparently there's not much more to it. So if you find that sounds interesting, then I'm guessing you may find the film a bit interesting as well. So Gaspar Noé, his kind of filmmaking, he really goes for the trying to really get the emotions going of a viewer, but in more of an uncomfortable way. So he doesn't really want to make you cry. He wants to make you feel uncomfortable. So his audio, the way he works with sound design, really aims to unnerve you and to make you feel sick. I think Irreversible had a tone that made people sick, like as in a literal tone that made people sick. You know, the flashing there had some people tripping out as well. So he really goes for that experiential. He really wants to make you experience the film. When you've got a notoriously provocative director, that's what Adam wrote. When you've got a notoriously provocative director with a reputation for confronting cinema, the last thing you expect is to get bored by it. But the last 10 or 15 minutes are really quite dull. It's not that it's bad. It's just too insubstantial. So that's Climax. Comes out in Australian cinemas on December 6th. And we gave it a 3 out of 5. So be sure to check out that review as well. What else we got? Netflix has cancelled Daredevil. Daredevil, after 3 seasons, it's done. Netflix is... they officially announced it. They're no longer going to continue with it. So Marvel and Netflix... It looks like a lot of their behind-the-scenes troubles that they've been having, it's really starting to come to the forefront, resulting in... This is the third Netflix Marvel show that's been cancelled now. Iron Fist got cancelled, which wasn't too much of a surprise. Iron Fist generally was... received quite mixed opinions. I didn't like it personally. I didn't think Iron Fist was great at all. I didn't even bother seeing the second season. I wanted to, just in terms of... because I wanted to tick off the boxes that I'd seen all these things. But I never got around to the second season of Iron Fist, and I probably won't now that it's been cancelled. So that was the first one. Not too surprising. But then Luke Cage got cancelled like a week later or something like that. That was a bit more surprising, because that generally had a better... there was generally better opinions for that show than Iron Fist. And now, Daredevil. So you got 3 shows done. Finished. Daredevil being the most surprising, I think. Generally, all the critics seem to love it. Audiences seem to enjoy it. The third season, it appeared to have received the most acclaim, I think. And it's done. So you've only got The Punisher and Jessica Jones left. As for some of the reasons why it's done, certain reports have come out saying that it's simply too expensive to produce, and Netflix forked out a lot of money to initially get these shows. When they bought this stuff, 5 years ago or something? When they initially made the deal with Marvel, it was to really start capitalizing on getting their own huge shows. I mean, they capitalized on the Marvel brand. That's genius. It's a genius move by Netflix, and it's understandable that they paid a lot of money to get that going. The problem is now, Netflix is massive. Like, way more massive than it was 5 years ago, and they've got so many original properties of their own that they don't necessarily need this Marvel collaboration that's really expensive. They don't really need it. The other thing is that Marvel likes to produce 13-episode seasons, and Netflix is wanting to start cracking on to 10-episode seasons, which I think is a better idea. I think keep the seasons shorter, because some of the problems with some of the Netflix shows, or just shows in general, is when they're trying to hit a number of episodes, but the story feels as though it could be done in 8, and they've got to drag it for 13. It feels like it could be done in 5, and they want to drag it to 10, etc., etc. The number of episodes should fit how good the narrative is for that. Not the other way around. So when you start to drag out a narrative to ensure that you fill out a number, you get episodes that feel as though, well, this is just padding. You know, flashback episodes and stuff like that. It just feels like padding. So that's something else that apparently Netflix and Marvel have been having issues with. Marvel wants to keep the 13-episode runs, and Netflix wants it 10. Another reason is the amount of showrunners that Daredevil's had. It's had one different showrunner for every season. That can create different problems when it comes to the creative back end. You know, so say if there's a writer's room, all of a sudden it's a bit different now. And then you risk having a different tone. You risk having a drop in quality. It just makes sense to stick to one showrunner for as long as you possibly can. The more and more you change showrunners, the more and more it looks unstable from a creative point of view. So I don't think Marvel's been happy with that. I don't think Netflix has been happy with that. Either way, they've both decided to just call it a day. So here's the thing. Netflix doesn't release any numbers. So as in ratings or viewership numbers and stuff like that. So they keep it all really, really hidden. So it's hard to know how successful these shows were. But they seem to have been pretty successful. So it's surprising to have 3 shows cancelled within like a month or something like that. So you've got The Punisher and Jessica Jones left. So far, it seems as though they're still okay. So Jessica Jones and The Punisher will be getting... The Punisher will be getting season two. Jessica Jones should be getting another season as well. So I don't know. I don't know how to feel about this because I was really a huge fan of specifically Daredevil. It just felt as though Daredevil had much more of a run left on Netflix. And I was a fan of the tone that they'd struck there. But if it means that Daredevil can continue somewhere else and it's still going to remain the same amount of quality, I don't care where it is. I'll see it. Marvel has stated that it's not the end for Daredevil. What does that mean exactly? I don't really know because Daredevil, what did Marvel say? We look forward to more adventures with the man without fear in the future. That's what Marvel said in their official statement. What does that even mean? Does that just mean obviously the Daredevil character is going to be used again? Duh. Or does it mean something along the lines of, hey man, this Daredevil, as in with Charlie Cox playing the character, this Matt Murdock will continue. Who knows? With the Disney streaming service coming, I wouldn't be surprised if all of a sudden we have Iron Fist, Luke Cage, and Daredevil over there. People don't care where it is, really. I mean, everyone's going to be jumping on this Disney streaming service as well. You know, I've had a couple of friends that say, I'm not going to get another one. I'm not going to get Disney streaming service. Believe me, you're going to get the Disney streaming service. That's going to have everything. They've got Star Wars shows there. They're going to have, I mean, it's Disney. They own like half the world now. And with the Fox deal goes through, believe me, you're going to be getting a Disney streaming service. You're going to get it. I wouldn't be surprised to see these Marvel shows end up hitting there. They've obviously got Loki show coming up. I think a Scarlet Witch show. I think that's what is slowly helping Marvel decide on cutting the cord for once and for all with Netflix. They've had a good run. They've had a long run. What else? What else we got going on? A lot of Netflix news. There's also a live-action Cowboy Bebop series heading to the streaming service. Cowboy Bebop is an anime series from the 90s. I never managed to get fully into Cowboy Bebop, but I know how respected it is and how many fans this thing has. So there was a Cowboy Bebop series in the 90s, I think 98, 99. And then the Cowboy Bebop, the movie, was released in 2001, I think, in Japan. And so now we're going to get a live-action series based on that. This is going to be interesting to see what happens here. A live-action translation of anime, they generally haven't been that great. Surprisingly, Japan hasn't really been able to make great ones either when it comes to live-action translations. Let's see what happens here. I'm interested in this one. There's a pretty good team on board as showrunners, executive producers. You have Andrew Namek, Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, Josh Applebaum, Alias, Jeff Pinkner, Venom, and Scott Rosenberg, Nightfall. And these guys are all behind the series Zoo, which I don't really watch, but I know that I've got a couple of friends that love that show. So they're all going to be producing under the Midnight Radio moniker. And the anime director, Shinichiro Watanabe, he was behind the whole Cowboy Bebop anime series and the movie. He directed, I think, everything. He's attached to the project as a consultant. I guess if you're worried, hopefully that helps, that at least he's going to be involved in some way, shape, or form. The first episode is going to be written by Christopher Yost, who co-wrote Thor Ragnarok. But we know that Taika Waititi got the script and was basically like, well, let's just see what else I can do. Everyone, use the script as a guideline and freestyle the rest of it. So take that how you will. What else we got? We got Candyman. There's a Candyman movie on the way. And Jordan Peele, director-writer of Get Out, the comedian from Key and Peele, he's going to be producing the film. It's been called a spiritual sequel. So it doesn't really mean much in terms of a narrative yet. Who knows how much of a sequel per se this will be. But it's been called a spiritual sequel to the 1992 horror film, which starred Tony Todd as that one-armed killer that appears after you say his name 5 times in front of a mirror. So Candyman is on the way. And on board to direct the film is Nia DaCosta. She's a newcomer who recently made her feature directorial debut with a little Western drama called Little Woods. That one stars Tessa Thompson, Lily James, James Badge Dale. It had its debut at Tribeca Film Festival in April. Peele said in a statement, "The original was a landmark film for black representation in the horror genre. Alongside Night of the Living Dead, Candyman was a major inspiration for me as a filmmaker, and to have a bold new talent like Nia at the helm of this project is truly exciting. We are honored to bring the next chapter in the Candyman canon to life and eager to provide new audiences with an entry point to Clive Barker's legend." Clearly, it looks like Jordan Peele is very passionate about this. This is a passion project. He loves the original, and he considers it to be a big influence on his love of film. I think I heard about this project a while ago, and I thought that Peele was going to end up directing it. I'm kind of disappointed that he's not going to direct it, but I'm still very excited about this project. So fingers crossed for this one. Candyman on the way. Speaking of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, news has broken last week that Sony is really looking to capitalize on this. They're very excited about all the early buzz and the great reviews that have been popping up, including ours. All the buzz is suggesting that they're going to make a killing with this thing, okay? What does that mean? That means that they're going to be expanding this little universe and really trying to focus on creating the franchise out of this animated film. We've got a sequel already in the works and a spin-off. So a sequel and a spin-off to a film that hasn't dropped yet is already in the works at Sony. A sequel that'll follow on Miles Morales' adventures. That's the Spider-Man that we have. The spin-off will be following female characters. Spider-Gwen, Gwen Stacy, who's voiced by Hailee Steinfeld in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. She's expected to be one of the main characters in the female-focused spin-off. According to Deadline, the Spider-Woman film will focus on three generations of women with Spidey powers. And the script will be coming from Beck Smith, with longtime Spider-Man Sony producer Amy Pascal attached as well. The spin-off has a script that will come from Wonder Woman 1984 and Zombieland 2 screenwriter David Callahan. So this guy's got quite a lot on his plate now, and he'll be writing the sequel. So look, expect to see this go on and on and on and on if things keep going well, because obviously Sony's had a bit of an up and down journey with their Spider-Man stuff. You think back to Spider-Man 1, Spider-Man 2, they were on fire. Spider-Man 3 came along. What the hell happened there? Then we had Andrew Garfield, who arrived with The Amazing Spider-Man 1, The Amazing Spider-Man 2. I didn't mind those films. They got panned. They got completely panned, and they weren't crash hot at the box office either. So Sony had so many plans with that franchise, and that didn't go anywhere, as we all know now. But it looks like Sony's really, really starting to tick off the right boxes now. There's a Spider-Man deal with Marvel to have Tom Holland in the Marvel Universe while being able to continue doing their own thing. It was a really smart move, and it's going really well so far. And Venom, man, that thing just hasn't stopped. It's had legs for days. It's past $800 million. $800 million. I didn't like Venom that much. I'm sorry. So many fans. It has so many fans, so many people, but I wish I liked it a bit more, but who cares what I think? The thing has exploded at the worldwide box office. It surpassed Wonder Woman, which was critically acclaimed, and that was considered to be a really huge hit. So, you know, Sony's on fire right now. I'm interested to see how well Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. If they've got a sequel in mind already in the works, and they've got a spin-off, oh man, these numbers are expected, they're going to be huge. Yeah, so yeah, good on you, Sony. It looks like you're doing well for yourself. So there's a new Hellboy on the way, and a new image arrived of David Harbour in character. He looks awesome. David Harbour looks awesome in this. David Harbour, for in case you didn't know, is from Stranger Things. He plays the sheriff, and he wouldn't be my first choice automatically to think of who should play Hellboy following Ron Perlman, who was pretty much perfect for the character. But these images, so this is a new image, but there was another image released a while ago when filming began. The new image has helped David Harbour as Hellboy running. He's got the coat and looking buff as hell. It looks good. And once again, director Neil Marshall has confirmed that yes, they are aiming to make this quite dark. They're going to be aiming for an R rating in the US, which I don't know, maybe it's going to be an MA here or a hard M here in Australia, but it means we're going to be getting quite a harsher film. I mean, Guillermo del Toro's two Hellboy films, which I really liked, I think they're quite good. They were definitely more family oriented, or at least tamer for the mainstream audience. Neil Marshall, in a recent quote, speaking of Empire, he said, "It was always the case of, when in doubt, go back to the source material. Some of that stuff is pretty sick. More violent and more bloody. We weren't making it with handcuffs on." So more violent and more bloody, he's promising that in this new Hellboy film, which looks badass so far. I mean, we've only received a couple of images, but I'm excited for this. Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, Seth Rogen, who I'm sure many of you know, he's getting more and more into producing television. So Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, they've been together for quite a while as a creative duo. They were behind films such as This Is the End and The Interview. They've also been tackling TV quite well. AMC series Preacher, they're behind that. Hulu's Future Man, they're behind that. And now they're going to be moving on to another series adaptation, this time of Blake J. Harris' book called Console Wars, Sega, Nintendo, and the Battle That Defined a Generation. Now, that novel explored the fascinating story of what really went down behind the scenes during the console war War, when Sega decided to take on Nintendo and in turn helped revolutionize the video game industry as we know it. According to Variety, Rogan and Goldberg, they're going to be executive producing the series. On board to direct and also executive produce will be Jordan Vaught Roberts, who he directed The Kings of Summer. That was a small little coming of age film. And then he made his big blockbuster debut with Kong Skull Island. So he's going to be on board as director, and he'll be executive producing alongside Rogan and Goldberg. Rogan and Goldberg were actually attached to both write and direct a Console Wars movie back in 2014. Then a documentary was supposed to be released before the film. This limited series, that's going to be happening instead of the feature. I don't really know much about the Sega versus Nintendo battle, but apparently that had a huge impact on the gaming industry around that time and a huge impact on the evolution of it. So I'm guessing this will be in the 90s. Should be cool. And we've had a few interesting trailers drop. Luther Season 5 trailer arrived. Guys, how good is Luther? If you haven't seen Luther, I highly suggest you check it out. It's a British crime drama thriller series starring Idris Elba. He's a troubled cop. It's just good. It's riveting television. Alice, played by Ruth Wilson, she's had a really big part in the series, especially related to Luther, the main character. And she's back. I don't want to give too much away in terms of why this is interesting, because you should watch the series if you haven't. Having Ruth Wilson back, a new mask-wearing serial killer. I'm ridiculously excited about this. It's going to be 4 episodes. It's much better since season 4? Only had 2 parts. Cool that we had season 4, but that was a bit underwhelming. 4 episodes here. Can't wait for that. And we also had a bigger trailer drop for Vox Lux. It's a drama about a pop star. Natalie Portman plays the pop star, and she's getting a lot of great buzz for this. I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to have Oscar nominations for Natalie Portman for Vox Lux and Lady Gaga for A Star Is Born, and they're both playing singers. That's going to be interesting to see them going head to head like that. The trailer, it's fascinating. This looks like a fascinating little film. It's basically about a 31-year-old pop star and a mother. She's trying to balance her career and a teenage daughter when a new act of violence demands her attention. Now, that's important because the first half of the film will actually be looking at her as a teenager when she and her sister compose a song about their experience in a high school shooting. That song goes viral, kicking off her career. And then we follow her as she's an adult, played by Natalie Portman. That sounds like a fascinating story. Even if not all the reviews that I've been reading are highly positive, most of them are just impressed at how ambitious it is, and Natalie Portman's performance as well. So I'll be keeping that one on my radar. It also stars Jude Law, Stacey Martin, and Willem Dafoe, I think, narrates it as well. So that one's coming out in the US on December 7th. It's going wide on December 14th. I'm not 100% if it's got a Australian release date yet. It should. Not sure. Don't have it on me right now. That's it, guys. Thanks for tuning in for the second episode of the Screen Realm podcast. I wanted to have a bit longer, but I've kind of run out of time. Got a screening to go to in 20 minutes. I'll be checking out Mary Poppins Returns. Mary Poppins Returns with Emily Blunt. Go check out screenrealm.com. There's still some competitions that are open for entries. So if you haven't checked it out, go to screenrealm.com/competitions, or you just go to screenrealm.com. Hit the menu and just go to win in the menu. There's Anna and the Apocalypse prize packs. I haven't talked about this, but Anna and the Apocalypse, it's out right now in limited release here in Australia. It's a zombie apocalypse musical Christmas film. That's right. So it's a Christmas film, it's a zombie film, and it's a musical, and it looks really good. So we've got prize packs just to celebrate the release of that film. Go check that out. Overlord comes out in cinemas on Thursday. I think there's only like 1 or 2 days left for that competition to wrap up. Check out Overlord. I saw this a month ago now. It was just a lot of fun. It's exactly what it looks like in the trailer, guys. Zombies, killing, war. It's pulpy, bloody fun. So check that out, guys. All right, stay tuned. Next week, more movie, TV goodness. Thanks for tuning in. Latest.